The U.S. Senate overcomes a filibuster on tougher gun laws, President Obama rolls out his proposed budget, and a tribal leader blasts state lawmakers for deregulating iron mining. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this morning. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And it is time for the Week in Review, when we take a look at the top international, national, and state news stories for the week. I'm happy to have Dan Kopanky joining me. He is former Republican state senator from La Crosse and owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team. Dan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity.
And Tony Palmieri is professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh and media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. Tony, thanks so much for joining us as well.
Sure. Good morning, Judith, and good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Tony.
Well, and I think one of the news is news items to cover is, why the heck does it still feel like winter out there?
We've got about 2 inches of snow on the ground over here in western Wisconsin, so it looks like maybe Christmas instead of heading towards the middle of April.
Well, it's snowing out my window here in Oshkosh as I'm talking, so...
Well, and I'm thinking, especially, Dan, that, you know, this is kind of crimping the excitement about baseball season coming up.
Yeah, a little bit. this morning, the field is covered with snow, and so people aren't thinking necessarily baseball, but it'll come around. This is rather unusual for April, although we've seen snow before in April and sometimes even in May.
Sometimes even down here in Madison in May. So, you know, never say never. But, boy, especially after last year's unbelievably warm March, this year just feels like it's off to a really slow start.
Sure does.
Well, let's jump right in with North Korea. Secretary of State John Kerry is making his first visit to Seoul, South Korea. He says the U.S. will not accept a nuclear North Korea and calls Pyongyang's rhetoric unacceptable. Meanwhile, at a hearing yesterday in Washington, it was disclosed by a branch of the Pentagon that the North is probably capable of arming a missile with a nuclear warhead, though the weapon isn't believed to be very reliable. North Korea says it has powerful striking means on standby. Dan Kopanky, is this just more tough talk, saber-rattling from the North, or this time around, do you think it's a real threat?
Well, it's a relatively new leader over there, so it's hard to judge. It's hard to say. We don't know what, you know, the stability of the region is, number one, with this guy in charge. But I think, you know, it really depends on here our relationships are very key with the allies in the region and beyond, and that's going to play a key role here. And I noticed where Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel said that the United States is fully prepared to deal with any contingency. We'll never know what that means, but we must back that up with whatever that those means are. No question about that.
And Tony Palmieri, you know, it seems like there is a certain level of, you know, taking the potential threat seriously, but there's also kind of a level of, you know, kind of seeing North Korea as a joke in a sense that we don't tend to attribute to a place like Iran. What do you think is the reason for that?
Since President Bush, I guess it was 2002, put North Korea in the so-called axis of evil, there's been these periodic outbreaks with this bluster from all sides. It's basically a total communication breakdown. I mean, when Dennis Rodman is the highest level American to get to the Capitol in North Korea, there's something wrong. Back in the Clinton years, President Clinton sent former President Jimmy Carter over to North Korea to broker some kind of deal. Maybe President Obama should send President Clinton over there to have a conversation, because clearly whatever is going on now is just creating a lot of tension literally all over the globe. And, you know, you'd like to think that there could be more dialogue and less of this, you know, like pointed, heated rhetoric.
And Dan Kopanky, how serious a threat do you think North Korea is?
Well, it depends on how this plays out. And I'm not sure, again, with this young leader, who knows what steps he may take. I'm glad that the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is there. And again, I think we need to rally the allies in the region and make sure that we stop this guy before there is something done that we all will regret.
Tony Palmieri, do you think that Kim Jong-un is playing primarily to a domestic audience, being a new leader and, you know, trying to establish himself in a place where that cult of personality is so important? Or is this equally for the international stage as well?
Probably all of the above. Like any other country, the leadership of North Korea wants to be able to negotiate from a position of strength. And they've calculated that this tough guy talk might produce that image. I mean, the whole thing is unfortunate, right? Very disturbing. You would especially hope that Japan, China, other Asian countries that could be more directly affected by any kind of war would get more active in these discussions. But I do think it's time for President Obama to try to do more to send Secretary of State Kerry over there to have some real discussions. Again, very, very much like Clinton did when he sent President Carter over there back in the 90s.
And Dan Kopanky, do you think that there is a real risk that the North will attack the South? I mean, certainly they have to know that that would create such a reaction from the international community.
Well, I think Tony said it very well. I mean, peace through strength is a statement, and I think this young leader is trying to show the world that he's strong. And whether there's a attack attempt, I would say that would be the chances of that are there, although slim. And that's why it's so important, as Tony mentioned, that the other players in the region, Japan, China, would join us in a show of strength to turn this guy maybe to some alternate thinking, if indeed he's thinking of any kind of an attack.
Well, let's stay on the international news front a little longer. Tony Palmieri, former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher died Tuesday of a stroke at the age of 87, and her funeral is scheduled for Wednesday. Thatcher fans say she rescued Britain from ruin and laid the groundwork for an economic resurgence. But there are a lot of critics who say she brought in an era of greed that hurt the weak. Tony, what's your assessment of Margaret Thatcher?
Well, I agree mostly with the critics. We all remember the 1980s where President Reagan in the United States and Prime Minister Thatcher in England, you know, really were two of the first what I might call austerity politicians, talking about making all kinds of budget cuts in programs that help the poor and the elderly, meanwhile giving the well-to-do, the well-connected, whatever they wanted. I mean, maybe the big difference is Reagan ended up really breaking our budget here and becoming one of the biggest deficit creators in history, which was not necessarily the case for Thatcher. But, yeah, I just think that Margaret Thatcher did not necessarily save England. I think she played a key role in starting the process of overturning some of their historic social programs.
And Dan Kopanky, what's your assessment of Margaret Thatcher? What's her legacy?
I wouldn't necessarily agree with my friend Tony, but I think Margaret was a wonderful leader for Britain who stood tall with the United States and President Ronald Reagan. As the Cold War was winding down and won by the West, tear down this wall. We needed allies like that at that particular time, and she was a great ally. She was the champion of freedom and a free market advocate. Again, if the public sector is to be healthy, the private sector has to grow. And you can't grow the public sector at the expense of the private. It just can't happen, and it's not happening. And we see what's going on now with our gross domestic product, how that's just lagging. Job reports are bad. It's all about what the federal government and what governments are doing to the private sector to stymie growth in the economy. And that's what Margaret Thatcher believed, and that's what President Reagan believed, and that's what many of us today believe.
We are taking a look at the Week in Review. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Joy Cardine today, talking with Dan Kopanky, former Republican State senator from La Crosse and owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team, and Tony Palmieri, who is professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh and media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. What do you think about the news of the week? Are you concerned about a strike by North Korea? What about Margaret Thatcher? And what about the national and state level? We've got budgets, we have guns, we have immigration policy, we have the State of the Tribes address that happened this week in Wisconsin. Lots to talk about. We'd love to have you join us at 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org, and you can leave a question or comment on our Facebook page. That's The Joy Cardine Show. And actually, let's pop back to North Korea briefly and talk with Art in Milwaukee. Hi, Art.
Hi. Although it seems to have a really hard time getting through the U.S. media, we are in a state of war with North Korea. We have been ever since the hot war. All that was signed was a ceasefire or an armistice. And people in North Korea know that. They're freaked out. They think, you know, there's no foreign troops in North Korea. They're just in our troops in the south. And as Jimmy Carter said on The Daily Show a couple of days ago, when he went over there, they agreed to everything he asked for. They agreed, and it was put in writing, that they would not pursue nuclear weapons if we would just agree to sign a peace treaty with them. And that was in writing under Clinton. And then when Bush came in, he tore it up and said they were axis of evil. And if we would just try and end the war, and then they might relax a little bit, and they wouldn't have to go through all these antics to try to, in their view, defend themselves.
Thanks for that call, Art. And Dan, do you think it's that easy?
Well, I don't think it's that easy, but again, I think with what we're doing and what the president has, again, has sent the Secretary of State over there, rallying our forces, rallying our troops, and communication. We must have communication with our friends and our foes, our potential foes, and I think that's what the Secretary of State's doing, and hopefully that'll diffuse any situation over there that might prop up or exist today.
And Dan, or Tony, what do you think?
Well, we're dealing with a totalitarian regime that presides over a population that is suffering. We have massive high levels of poverty in North Korea. The problem is when President Bush declared them the axis of evil and began a belligerent approach on our side, that actually strengthens totalitarian regimes. And I think Art is making a good point. When the Clinton administration started to open up some communication, that actually seemed to be helping matters for at least a little while. The heated approach on all sides has not really helped out. And that's why I think President Obama really needs to step this up a notch on the peace side of the equation and send Secretary of State Kerry there and maybe others like President Clinton to start engaging in the kind of dialogue similar to what Carter did in the 90s that did seem to have some success at that time.
And it is the Week in Review on the Joy Cardine Show here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Joy Cardine, and we will talk more about the week's news right after this. It is the Week in Review on the Joy Cardine Show. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Joy Cardine, visiting with Dan Kopanky and Tony Palmieri, and we would love to have you join our conversation as well. We are going to be looking at the top national news stories next. We will talk about gun control, immigration policy, and the Obama budget. You can join us by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org. And don't forget, at 4 o'clock today on the Ideas Network, it is Your Views on the News on At Issue, today with host Dean Kallenbach. Well, let's switch and talk a little bit about guns. Guns certainly have been, I think, in the news just about every week. In the Week in Review recently, gun control supporters in the Senate yesterday overcame a Republican-led filibuster attempt, which Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson was a part of. So now let's let the debate begin on the Democratic legislation. The Senate is expected to consider next week a proposal to expand federal background checks for gun purchases at shows and online. And Majority Leader Harry Reid says debate could go on for weeks, as many Republicans and moderate Democrats think that some of the proposals go too far. Dan Kopenke, what do you make of the deal reached by Democrat Joe Manchin and his colleagues?
Well, I subscribe fully 100% to the Second Amendment, which says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. If someone is bent on criminal behavior, they're certainly not going to follow any kind of rules, regulations, or laws that are in place to secure a weapon. And a good example of that is Illinois, which is the last state in the union to have banned concealed carry. They've got some of the toughest gun control laws in the nation, and their homicide rate in Chicago is absolutely tragic. So, again, law-abiding citizens are not the people that we should be going after here. We should enforce the laws that are in place. I heard a report yesterday that I believe last year, and I think this was from a U.S. senator, maybe Lindsey Graham said, said that there were 15,000 felons who attempted to purchase a gun illegally last year. Of those 15,000, only 44 have been prosecuted by U.S. Justice Department. That's what we need to do, is enforce the laws we have and not infringe on the rights of law-abiding citizens to keep and bear arms.
Tony Palmieri?
You know, Judith, before we get into the actual debate, you mentioned Senator Ron Johnson on this. I got to say, just to put a Wisconsin focus on this, I was extremely disappointed that Senator Johnson wanted to filibuster this and not even allow it to come up for a debate. Unlike Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican from South Carolina, who doesn't support any of the proposed reforms, but he said, I look forward to a debate. What is Senator Ron Johnson afraid of in a debate? And, you know, it's especially outrageous because your listeners may remember that in 2010, during the Senate campaign, Johnson actually came out at the Tea Party rally and said he supported what he called minimal gun licensing. And then the day after that, the NRA got to him, and he completely, you know, like a good little Republican, he immediately went and changed his mind, and now he's supporting filibusters against debate. I think we should expect more from Senator Johnson. If he wants to throw some amendments onto this legislation, fine. But to want to prevent there from even being a chance to discuss it on the floor of the Senate, I think that is somewhat outrageous. And the sad thing is, whatever does pass in Washington probably will be much weaker than it needs to be. It's looking like the best that might happen is expanded background checks, and it's not clear how much that will actually do. I think Senator Johnson's idea of gun licensing would be a more strict reform that has no chance in the U.S. Senate. The assault weapons ban has no chance in the United States Senate. And I know Dan disagrees with this, but things that many believe would make some dent in this program, or in this problem, excuse me, do not have a chance in the U.S. Senate, and that's unfortunate.
Dan Kopenke, do you think that this issue was worth a filibuster?
Well, you know, about a month ago, Senator Rand Paul held a filibuster concerning the drones and their targets and whether they be U.S. citizens. And people, you know, that was another issue, obviously, but the senator stood up for what he believed in. And people in this country are looking for leaders that will stand up. They may disagree with them, but at least they're standing up. And Senator Johnson has a strong stand on this gun control issue, and many people, including myself, applaud him for the stance that he takes. The filibuster didn't work. Now there will be a debate. I think the debate will be healthy, and I agree with Tony that what comes out of here, I hope, will be minimal. I know there's all kinds of issues on the table here, but let's just look at, you know, who's going to determine whether we get into the mental health status, who's going to determine what standards are we going to use. If my neighbor thinks that I'm kooky and calls the police repeatedly on me because I'm they don't like me or whatever. Am I going to be watched now? Is somebody going to come in and say, well, you're unstable? I mean, all of these things could happen, and in some states, they already are. And so I think it's a very slippery slope. And again, the Second Amendment is not wordy. It's very clear what it says.
And let's go to the phones and Jim in Fontana. Hi, Jim.
Yes, I'd like to speak to the gun issue.
All right.
I think the NRA is burying itself, and maybe that's a good thing because their arguments are so illogical. And there's no such thing as a perfect world. Of course, legislation is not going to stop every criminal. But to say, well, criminals will still get guns, so therefore let's make it as easy as possible for criminals to get guns. And what's never said is the NRA stands for the gun manufacturer. It's a lobbyist, and this, Senator Johnson, obviously that's exactly what lobbyists do, and they're making money. The NRA, or the gun lobby, I should say, and the manufacturers, they depend on criminals to buy their guns. And no businessman is going to cut out their market, so they will do everything they can to make sure that those gun manufacturers are making money. And guns don't wear out. It's not like a car. A gun can last three generations. So even though we have 300 million guns out there, the NRA is the pimp for the gun manufacturers to be out there, buy more guns. We're going to make you afraid. And then Senator Johnson has a YouTube about people who have been harmed by the government. So make them afraid, make them paranoid, then give them guns. It borders on treason, and America is tired of it.
And Dan Kopenke, how would you respond to Jim?
Well, I hope Jim is not insinuating that gun dealers and gun manufacturers are interested in selling guns to criminals, because I think that's a very big misstatement. And again, the Second Amendment, law-abiding citizens should not be infringed upon the right to own and carry guns. And that's very basic. It's not law-abiding citizens who are committing these crimes. And so we should enforce the laws we have. Again, that 15,000 felons, only 44 prosecuted, that says it all, that we should be going after those people who are intent on criminal activity.
And Jess in Milwaukee, I think, has a little different take on things. So let's go there. Hi, Jess.
Yes, hi. How are you doing this morning?
Good.
Well, the interesting thing is with the rights of the people shall not be infringed. Any kind of permit, whether concealed carry or anything else, is an infringement. Because when you need a permit, you're asking permission to do something that you automatically have the right to do, concealed carry or anything else. You take Aurora, the guy went in with concealed weapons, okay, didn't have a permit. Are we going to hold him up because he didn't have a permit or because he shot people? The fact is, the rights of the people shall not be infringed means exactly that. And everybody keeps making it seem something more than what it is. The reason the founders wrote in such clear and plain language is there shouldn't be all of this crazy discussion about what is the meaning and what is the intent. The state militia is to be regulated. That's what it says, a well-regulated state militia. I'm not part of a militia. If I choose to own a gun, it is my right to own a gun, not to go hunting. That's my choice if I want to. But because the founders recognized that if a government encroaches on, then the population can defend themselves. And that's the whole point behind the Second Amendment.
And I want to give Tony Palmieri a chance to respond to that. Tony, what's the balance between the rights of people to own guns and the rights of people who would rather not have guns around them?
First of all, everybody agrees that the majority of gun owners are responsible people. But clearly, we've got a dramatic problem in our country. I mean, since Newtown alone, we've had 3,000 people killed by guns. I mean, there's clearly a problem here. The Supreme Court has said that the government can regulate gun ownership. The regulations we've had in place have been weak, or they have not prevented the crisis that we've got in the country. Your first caller, Jim, I believe his name was talking about the NRA. There was a time when the NRA supported universal background checks. Now they don't. They've flip-flopped on the issue. The NRA's solutions to this problem seems to be to add more guns into the mix. I mean, that solution is not taken seriously by the overwhelming majority of Americans. So, and again, the sad thing is, in this current United States Senate, it doesn't look like any reform that will get passed is going to make any major dent in this problem. There's the fact of the matter is, when there was an assault weapons ban from the 90s until the early 2000s, there were much fewer of these types of Newtown and Virginia Tech type of massacres that they're seeing. The assault weapons ban does have an impact, and it's really time for people at the street level to speak up and make their minds make their ideas and views known.
It's the Week in Review on the Joy Cardine Show. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Joy Cardine, visiting with Dan Kopenke, former Republican state senator from La Crosse and owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team. Tony Palmieri is professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh and media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. And let's move on to immigration now. It looks like we'll see an immigration bill next week in the Senate. Those in the know say the legislation would require all employers to verify the legal status of their workers and greatly boost border security and put many of the 11 million immigrants living in the country illegally on a path to citizenship. Tony Palmieri, is this a proposal you can get behind, or do you have some issues with it?
Well, I mean, this is kind of like the gun safety legislation. Our mass media often presents these as some bold, dramatic reforms. But the fact is that the key element of the immigration reform is the pathway to citizenship. Which critics on the right, many of them, are calling amnesty. The fact of the matter is, in both the president's bill and whatever the U.S. Senate alternative will be or currently is, it would take anywhere from 8 to 13 years for someone to become a citizen. I mean, that's not what I would call a very bold reform. So it's obviously something needs to be done. You cannot have this many millions of people in the country for extended period of time paying taxes, doing work, and not having some way to become citizens. But 8 to 13 years, that strikes me as a very weak reform.
It's certainly not an express lane by any
means. It's not an express lane. Contrary to the criticisms that you'll hear on the cable talk shows, they would lead people to believe that people are going to become citizens overnight. If 8 years is overnight, I'd hate to see what a long period would be.
And Dan Kopenke, it seems like, similar to the gun issue, actually, of, saying that the vast majority of gun owners are upstanding people who are not a danger. Can the argument be made about immigrants, that the vast majority of immigrants, whether they are here with legal papers or not, are working hard and actually, paying into the tax system?
Well, they're here, and a vast majority of them, I believe, are hardworking people who want to come here and provide for their families, which is a very noble cause. In the past, however, another point there is they are here illegally, so that has to be addressed. But in the past, I think that the point that's held up immigration reform more than anything else is the border issue. And are we going to have border controls that are going to stop this influx of people coming in? And that's really seems to be addressed now. And so I think that point there will lead to some kind of immigration reform. And I don't know what exactly that's going to look like. And these people that are here illegally, that's going to be addressed. I know there's a lot of people that want that addressed, that they did come here, they did break the law. So I think that's going to be addressed. There is a path to citizenship. I think the people that are here, if they're hardworking, law-abiding citizens providing for their families, I think there will be a way. I think that's what's going to be the outcome. I've talked in the past about someone wanting to come into this country being sponsored by an employee. I think there was a while back, many years ago, that's how the first immigrants came here. They were sponsored by somebody, sponsored by an employer who provides them with benefits so that they come in here, they're hardworking, they can provide for their family, and they're not a drain on the public sectors of the various states and governments around. So I think there'll be something that is going to be addressed, and we'll probably come out with something. What that looks like remains to be seen.
Tony Palmieri, do you think that, you know, this kind of two-pronged approach of dealing with the immigrants that are already here versus, you know, making sure that there is not this continual influx over the border, is that two-pronged approach really the only way that liberals and conservatives are going to come together on this issue?
Well, again, you have to look at the politics of the current United States Senate. I mean, that'll be the only approach that has a chance there. If you look at the politics of it, Judith and Dan, the Republicans looked at the election results in November of 2012, and they clearly have a problem with many populations in the Southwest and so on. So it's in the interest of the Republican Party to do something about this issue. I mean, you'll notice that it wasn't until after those 2012 elections that even the Republicans started talking about the pathway to citizenship, because they saw that the strict, toughness, tough talk, border security angle on it just really doesn't sell to voters. So there's a lot of domestic politics going on here. And so, the way you describe it is, I think, what does have a chance in the current U.S. Senate.
And Kathy in Stoughton actually has a comment on immigration, so let's go there. Hi, Kathy.
Hi there, Judith. I guess the point that I want to make, and what really frustrates me, is the fact that people are assuming that all of the undocumented immigrants in this country are coming from Mexico and Central America. With this worldwide economy, I'd like to point out that we have student visas that are expiring. There are people here from all over the world, from Europe, from Canada. We never hear about the Canadians. You know, there are many Canadians that are here, quote unquote, illegally and without papers. And honestly, it's almost, to me, a kind of a slap in the face. It's almost like racist comments, in my opinion. Thank you.
Thanks for that comment, Kathy. Dan Kopenke?
Well, again, it's fact that there's 12 or 15 million or whatever that number is here illegally, and they need to be addressed. We can no longer look the other way and say, ignore the issue. And so I'm glad that people in Washington are taking up this issue and we come to some kind of resolution on it.
And did you want to add anything, Tony?
No, I just think Kathy makes a good point that the Mexican immigrants especially have been much, much easier to scapegoat over the years by some unscrupulous politicians than other immigrants. And so I think she's making a very good point. It is time to be more honest about the fact that America does have immigrants coming from all over the world and not just one part of the world.
Thanks for that, Kathy. And let's move now to President Obama's budget. He released his $3.8 trillion budget this week. It raises taxes on the rich and cuts the cost of living expenses and increases for Social Security and Medicare recipients. The budget projects $1.8 trillion in deficit reductions over the next decade. President Obama says he's gone more than halfway to meet Republicans, but House Speaker John Boehner says the GOP isn't going to go beyond the $660 billion tax hikes that were approved in January. Dan Kopenke, is Speaker Boehner right on this? Are we taxed out?
Well, I think he's right, yes. They agreed to that huge tax increase in December. We don't have a revenue problem in Washington. We have a spending problem, well-documented spending problem, 16.7, 16.8 trillion debt that we're passing on to generations to come. It's unconscionable. And so Speaker Boehner is right. We must balance that budget, and we must do it in a very timely manner, and the spending has got to stop. It's not a tax issue. It's a spending issue. And if you want to put a further crimp on the growth of gross domestic product, just increase taxes, and you'll see it happen.
But, Tony Palmieri, do you think that cuts to things like Social Security and Medicare are the way to go?
Of course not. And what frustrates me about the Obama administration, and we saw the same thing with the health care debate in 2009, for some reason, the president begins the negotiations with a compromise position. Why would he start these budget talks with a chained CPI position that would affect benefits for Social Security recipients? If that's a position that he and the Congress arrive at after months of negotiation. That's one thing. But to start off with that position, to me, seems unwise, and now makes it more difficult for him to have any kind of vigorous defense of these social programs that millions of Americans rely on. But having said that, I have to laugh at Speaker Boehner, who says that we have the spending problem. He must remember the Clinton years. He was there. President Clinton left George W. Bush with a surplus. So we did not have a spending problem then. We then had a Republican administration that gave us a Medicare Part D that they could not pay for. They gave us two wars, and they gave us massive tax cuts on the rich, people who did not need them, and they broke our budget. And then all of a sudden, Speaker Boehner discovers a spending problem, and he attributes it to the Obama administration. So there's lots of hypocrisy here and rewriting of history that I find really disturbing. And it's very sad that Social Security recipients may now have to pay for mistakes made over many years by a government that has favored the top 1% at every turn.
And Dan Kopenke, you know, there's been a lot of outcry from seniors who say, you know, you're calling these entitlement programs, but guess what? I paid into these. You know, I worked hard for decades, and entitlement has really been used in a pejorative way. What's your response? What's the conservative response to those seniors?
Well, yeah, I'm surprised. Also, that he would propose, the president would propose that to Social Security recipients and Medicare people. I strongly believe that this is in response to Congressman Paul Ryan and others who are advocating for some kind of Social Security reform. So people that are 20 and 30 and 40 years old today will have something when they get to be of retirement age. Which, again, that's well documented. It needs to be done. I'm not sure this is the correct approach, and I am surprised that the president would go after those people who are receiving the Social Security benefits and Medicare benefits.
And what I don't understand, Judith, sure. And Dan, is what does the Social Security program have to do with our deficit? It's a completely separate program.
Supposed to be.
If the president and the Congress want to reform Social Security, that's fine. But why they're doing it in the context of the budget negotiation to reduce the deficit is beyond me. I don't understand what the Obama administration is doing on this front. And as will happen, the Republicans who have supported things like chained CPI for many years are now going to turn around and accuse the Democrats of being against Social Security.
And it certainly seems like for a long time we heard about the Social Security lockbox, and the at least the image being given was that, you know, this money was in a separate place, you know, never
right.
to be mingled. And it certainly seems like that lockbox has been open. I guess we'll just have to see if it turns into Pandora's lockbox or not as they talk about going into Social Security. Well, it is the Week in Review. I'm Judith Sears Poisson sitting in for Joy Cardine today, talking with Dan Kopenke, former Republican state senator from La Crosse and owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team, and Tony Palmieri, professor of communications at UW Oshkosh and media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. And we will be back to talk about school voucher programs, the State of the Tribe address, and more Wisconsin news, plus the Week in Review quiz right after this. You are listening to The Week in Review on The Joy Cardine Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this morning. Happy to be with you. We will be continuing our conversation, moving on to state news, talking with Dan Kopenke and Tony Palmieri. But right now, it's time for the Week in Review quiz. You'll have about 5 minutes to get your answer in. Here is your question. On Monday night, Stephen Colbert featured former President Bill Clinton on The Colbert Report, and created a Twitter account for Clinton. What is Bill Clinton's Twitter handle? Again, Monday night, Stephen Colbert featured former President Bill Clinton on The Colbert Report and created a Twitter account for Clinton. What is Bill Clinton's Twitter handle? You can call in at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email your answer to talk@WPR.org, and we will give you about 5 minutes to get that answer in. So, Dan, are you following Twitter for political candidates and politicians? Is that one of the ways you get your information?
In some respects, I do, yeah. I have to upgrade my account right now, and I haven't for about a month, and actually I miss it. So I got to get – I'm not high-tech enough to figure it out, so I got to take it someplace somebody can figure it out for me. But previous to that, I did. As we're on the run and everything, we look at the Twitter account, and we see all kinds of news, and it's very helpful.
Tony Palmieri, are you a Twitter aficionado?
Yes, I am. And my least favorite tweets are those from politicians. Tend to be self-serving and not very informative.
Well, and often not much of a conversation, really. More of
right.
a, I want you to have this information. So, well, we will hear from people about what that Twitter handle is for former President Clinton. But for now, let's move on to some state issues. The annual State of the Tribes address was held this week at the Capitol, and Lakota Ray Chairman Gordon Thayer ripped into lawmakers for deregulating iron mining. He said that Native Americans could not be dismissed as a subgroup of people in Wisconsin, and he said the tribes need to be consulted on government matters. The speech drew lots of applause from the public gallery, but not from Speaker Pro Tem Bill Cramer, who left the assembly chamber, saying that Thayer was talking out of both sides of his mouth. Cramer said Republicans reached out to the Bad River Band about the mine, but the tribe didn't want to talk, that they just flat out opposed the mine. Dan Kopenke, you served as a Republican in the legislature. How is the relationship between the party and the legislature as a whole with the tribes?
Well, I'm sure that this mine issue has caused a divide, but I thought previous to that, I always had, as a legislator, a good relationship with them and look forward to discussions with them. I know, again, there's controversy, obviously, over this mine issue, and that's caused some angst with them. I don't know how much our legislature, our governor, has reached out to them over this issue. I think there's been efforts made, I'm pretty sure. And I know they oppose it, but, again, there's other parts of the world and our neighbors across the river here in Minnesota who have been mining for a long time. Wisconsin has a history of mining. It has to be done in a responsible way. I always say that those riches have been put in the ground for us to use, and they have to be harvested in a very responsible manner and used for the good of the people. And so it's unfortunate that we have this incident over this mining issue. It's too bad we can't be together. I know it's controversial, and I know that a lot of time has been spent by the governor and by legislators on both sides to come up with some legislation that people could agree to. And it's very difficult on an issue like this.
And Tony Palmieri, what is it that people don't understand, you think, about the relationship between the state government and, for that matter, the federal government and the tribes?
Well, I mean, the tribes want respect, and I think that what the chair, Gordon Thayer, was saying in that very hard-hitting speech is that Wisconsin's government has not shown any proper respect for tribes. And, I mean, if you look at the mine issue, this mine may never happen after what will be many, many years of legal battle. And I think what Thayer is really saying is, why is the Wisconsin government putting the tribes in this position of having to get the feds involved, having to engage in what will be long-term legal battles, rather than just sit down with the tribes from the beginning and work something out? So I think what people need to understand is that there are tribal governments that do want to play a role in public policy, especially obviously in regions where their tribes are settled. And the Wisconsin government has not shown that level of respect. And for Republican Representative Bill Cramer to walk out of the speech, I mean, talk about thin-skinned. I mean, if Representative Kramer wanted to walk out of something, he should have walked out of the Republican caucus meetings when they were talking about a bill that was largely written by the mining industry. That's the time to walk out. But don't walk out on a public speech when a person is giving a very heartfelt, pull-no-punches speech, giving the view of the tribes as he sees it.
Dan Kopenke, do you think that was an okay move on Speaker Pro Tem's part or not?
Well, his reason for doing what is that he didn't feel there was respect coming from the tribes to the legislature, so that's how we feel justified. It's something I would not have done had I been sitting there, but again, there's some strong feelings on both sides of this this issue.
And, I think where people get a little confused is that these are sovereign nations. The tribes are sovereign nations. And so it's kind of the equivalent of walking out on, President Francois Hollande from France or something when he's giving an address. This isn't just testimony being, not that they should walk out on testimony by a citizen, but this isn't just like open testimony. This is the leader of a nation.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, there have been hearings. There's been many hearings on this mining issue. If that's the issue, and people have had a chance, including the tribes, to speak their mind, again, there's got to be compromise someplace, and you got to have dialogue to have compromise. And as far as I can tell, efforts have been made along those lines.
So let's talk about the public hearings on Governor Scott Walker's proposed spending plan on the budget. Those hearings continue this week and the latest coming Wednesday at Lake Delton. Local school officials and administrators say Walker's plan for private voucher schools and school funding would cost their districts millions of dollars. But some parents voiced their support for vouchers, saying that they should have the choice as to where to send their kids to school. Walker's plan would allow parents in 9 school districts to use taxpayer-funded vouchers to send their kids to private schools. Tony Palmieri, if you had the chance to speak at a hearing, how would you have come out on the voucher issue?
Well, I've been opposed to expanding the voucher program for a long time, just on the basis of the research that we've seen that the voucher schools really do not perform better than well-supported public schools, and that the voucher program does hurt our ability to fund public schools at the level that's needed. The Joint Finance Committee is getting some positive commentary about the voucher program, but overwhelmingly what they're hearing across the state is opposition to it, and even some Republicans in the legislature are voicing concern about expanding the program. So I when all is said and done, I'm hoping that the expanded voucher program does not make it through this budget.
Dan Kopenke, is there a real issue with parents not having real choice in where to send their children to school?
Well, I think there is. Obviously, there's some underperforming schools in some districts, and if they are underperforming, then it's my opinion it's about the kids. And we should do what's best for the kids. And if that means they go to a school where the kids can thrive and be better prepared to go to take that next step in their lives, then we should do it. But I would take, and I think we are, but I would take a measured approach to the expansion of vouchers in Wisconsin. And I think that's what the governor's doing. I think the legislature will do that. I know there's been some pushback from both sides on this proposal. And so I think that there's going to be a good dialogue on this issue and come out with something that hopefully will be better for the kids, not better for the schools or the teachers or the administration, but what is better for the kids. And that, in turn, will be better for the communities.
Quickly, Dan Kopenke, what do you make of GOP State Representative Howard Markline saying he'll challenge GOP Senator Dale Schultz should Schultz seek re-election?
I know both of these individuals very well. And somebody asked me recently about my recall in August of 2011, and my answer was, sooner or later, every elected official has to defend a vote they've taken, or a stance on an issue that they've taken, and whether it be at an election or, in my case, it was a recall. I think that's very, very fair. That's what's happening here, and it wasn't just one vote. It was several votes, and that's what's happening here, and I think that's healthy, and at the end of the day, the people in that respective district, 17th Senate district, they will make the choice as to if they want to continue to support Senator Schultz if he runs again, or support Representative Howard Markline. That's healthy.
All right. And we have a winner in our quiz. The quiz winner is Brandon in Cedarburg. He will have the choice of several books to choose from that have recently been featured on the show. So reminding people of the quiz question on Monday night, Stephen Colbert featured former President Bill Clinton on the Colbert Report and created a Twitter account for Clinton. What is Bill Clinton's Twitter handle? And the handles President Clinton and Real W.J. Clinton were taken, but Prez Billy Jeff was free. Stephen Colbert's bio for Clinton is, I am President William Jefferson Billy Jeff Rodham Clinton. Stephen Colbert is my BFF. And so already he has more than 144,000 followers. Well, Dan Kopanky, thank you so much for joining us today on The Week in Review.
Thank you, Judith.
And Tony Palmieri, thank you also for joining us today.
Thank you, Judith. Enjoyed it very much.
And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.